certain degree by pumping all of this money into the economy. So, you know, your question is, how can you fight it and what can you do?
We have 30 seconds.
Quite unfortunately, one of the few ways to do this is to hike interest rates, which is going to create damage to our economy. Many other important measures will take a lot of time, you know, such as improving the supply chain or cracking down on monopolies. So we're going to see interest rates hiked, and it's going to be a bumpy ride.
Well, we clearly have to come back to this conversation. Christopher Leonard, business reporter and author, new book out this week. It's called The Lords of Easy Money, How the Federal Reserve Broke the American Economy. And that does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh. Remember, wearing a mask is an act of love.
You're tuned into listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
Tune in Thursdays from 6 to 7 p.m. to hear Rose City Native Radio with your host, Jackie Malmstrom. Rose City Native Radio is a new public affairs program bringing you local and national Native issues and Native contemporary music. You can find more information about the show online at kboo.fm or find us on Facebook at Rose City Native Radio.
KBOO has a mobile app. You can listen to all your favorite shows, subscribe to KBOO podcasts, even set KBOO as your alarm clock. Just look for KBOO on the iTunes and Google Play Store. And don't forget to leave us a 5-star review.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, new research shows the world is in a mass extinction event. Why a million species are at risk? A debate erupts over Portland's public records law restrictions. And the Portland Thorns finish an internal investigation, what they found about alleged sexual misconduct by a former coach. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, January 27, 2022. I'm Annette Newell. Glad you could join us. Earth's biosphere may be experiencing the sixth mass extinction event on biological record. This is according to some new research. It's from the University of Hawaii and the French National Natural History Museum, and it is published in the scientific journal Biological Reviews. As Eric Alatis reports, it says because of human activity, more than 1 million species are expected to be lost in the coming decades.
New research suggests that Earth's sixth mass extinction event, on par with the one that ended the age of dinosaurs, is already underway. Noah Greenwald with the Center for Biological Diversity says the recent findings add to a growing pile of troubling news, including projections that more than 1 million species are likely to be lost in coming decades due to human activity. Greenwald says that's a problem because species make up ecosystems, and ecosystems provide critical services for people.
They clean our air, they clean our water, they moderate climate, they cycle nutrients, they pollinate crops. And so as we lose more and more species, we begin to lose those ecosystem functions.
Scientists studied extinction rates for invertebrate species, including snails, clams, and slugs, in part because vertebrate species, such as birds and mammals, received the lion's share of attention in the past. Researchers say their work answers skeptics who have argued that extinctions are happening at roughly the same rates that occur as a natural part of evolution. Habitat loss because of human activity is seen as a major driver of species loss, with climate change acting as an increasingly potent accelerant as fossil fuels continue to burn. Greenwald says while it's true that species have gone extinct in the past, the sheer scale of species loss over such a brief period of time is alarming.
Because of all the changes that people are causing on the planet, species are now going extinct much, much, much faster. That should be a cause for concern. I mean, essentially, we're fouling our own nest.
Researchers are calling for biologists to collect and document as many species as possible before they disappear. Greenwald believes conservation efforts should also be a priority. He points to the black-footed ferret as one example of what can be done to save species on the brink of extinction.
We were able to find a small population in Wyoming, and now we're working to save them. That's what we can do as people. We can undo this. We can save species if we protect them and we take this problem seriously.
This is Eric Galatis reporting for the Wyoming News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
The Portland Thorns internal investigation into allegations of sexual coercion and harassment by a former coach has ended, but the results aren't being shared yet. The allegations were from 2 Portland players in 2015, Mana Shim and Sinead Fairley, against their then-coach Paul Riley. Riley was fired shortly thereafter, but any connection to sexual harassment was not revealed. Riley quickly was hired at another national women's soccer league team in North Carolina. The president of both the Thorns and the Timbers, Gavin Wilkerson, has been on leave while this internal investigation happened. Now he's back in his old job. The league and the players' union asked that current and former players not be interviewed for the investigation. Both of these organizations are doing their own investigation of sexual harassment and coercion at the Portland Timbers, and the results will come out with the internal review all at once. Players were not interviewed for the internal investigation, but have been told that if they want to speak out, the investigation will be reopened. Thorns fans have protested in support of the players for months. They're demanding that Wilkerson be fired, that the results of the investigation be made public, and that the players get justice. Some fans declined to renew their season tickets in protest, prompting the front office to extend the ticket deadline to January 28th. The league and players' union investigations are ongoing. The Winter Olympics are scheduled to start on February 4th. Multiple groups opposed to holding the games in Beijing are pushing to boycott the event. Now China itself is protesting American plans for a diplomatic boycott. With more on this story, here's KBOO's Josh Salem.
China wants the United States to stop interfering with the Beijing Winter Olympics, scheduled to begin next week. Foreign Minister Wang Yi directed this demand to U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken early Thursday, Beijing time. The U.S. has stated it will not send dignitaries to the Games in a protest over the detention of more than 1 million Uyghur Muslims in the northwest corner of China, as well as crackdowns on human rights elsewhere in the country. China has also voiced displeasure with potential U.S. State Department plans to withdraw staff and dependents from the embassy and consulates around the country. Wang also called for an end to U.S. support for the self-governance of Taiwan, which China still claims as its own territory. The foreign minister has complained that President Biden's administration has maintained tough political and economic policies, despite expressing a desire for a less confrontational relationship. Wang said, quote, "The U.S. continuously puts forward wrong words and actions towards China, causing new conflicts in relations between the two countries," end quote. The State Department recently reported Blinken and Wang have discussed health security and climate change, as well as the security risk posed by Russian aggression towards Ukraine. It did not mention the Olympics or Taiwan. The U.S. did recently appoint a new ambassador to China, Nicholas Burns. The position has been empty for over a year. The boycott does not prevent U.S. athletes from participating in the Winter Games. For KBOO News, I'm Josh Salem.
Portland city officials may be thinking about pushing for a change in state public records law after a years-long lawsuit cost them $250,000. Jeff Merrick is a public records advocate who sought information on Portlanders who had called to complain about houseless camps. He was denied those records, and in 2017 he sued. It was a long, drawn-out legal battle, but Merrick was ultimately the winner, walking away with $225,000 in attorney's fees. City councilors Wednesday voiced concerns about current public records law that it could result in the personal information of constituents who called the city hall being released. That change has to come at a state level, however. Public records advocates, on the other hand, often complain about how opaque the records request system in the city can be. The Society of Professional Journalists wrote a letter on the subject, calling attention to Portland's, quote, disturbing legacy of secrecy. For city councilors, it's a fine line between transparency in government and protecting the privacy and safety of their constituents. A Washington State project is highlighting working conditions for custodians, and it underscores their important work during this pandemic. Eric Teganoff reports on a storytelling project looking at the lives of custodians at the University of Washington.
Custodians have worked through the pandemic to ensure that people stay healthy. A new project focuses on their hard work and the need to better respect the profession. Evelyn Faye Tagana-Romano began the UW Custodian Project to show her respect for the University of Washington workers. When she spoke to custodians, they shared stories of racial discrimination and feeling belittled by people on their shifts.
That really hurts a lot of the custodians because they see that and they recognize when people don't acknowledge them or say hi or truly appreciate them for the hard work that they put in keeping our spaces clean.
Romano is a public health researcher who started the UW Custodian Project by bringing food to university custodians at the start of the pandemic, including to her mother, who was a custodian at the school. She then turned the undertaking into a photography-based storytelling project with 16 custodians. Romano's father was a custodian as well. She says she understands the sacrifices workers endure.
My grandmother would take care of me while my parents worked, and they did that for most of my childhood. And so I can only imagine how many custodians have to do that where they need someone else to take care of their kids while they worked.
Romano says there are a number of policies that could improve the lives of people in this profession. She points toward livable wages, hazard pay from the pandemic, and sick leave. Workers also could benefit from more access to interpretation services and a way to voice concerns on the job without fear of retaliation. Romano notes the cleaning supplies they use are another concern.
Thinking about the chemicals that they use, are they the best chemicals? Are there options that might be more friendly for their health?
Romano says people outside the profession can help as well.
If you're even able to introduce yourself to custodians who clean your spaces and get to know them a little better, you might be amazed at what you learn about that person and their work conditions.
For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Groups that fight for parents' needs are speaking out in favor of a deal between California Governor Gavin Newsom and legislative leaders to revive a policy granting extra paid leave during COVID. As Suzanne Potter reports, under a new proposal, workers could use as many as 3 days of paid sick leave to get and recover from a COVID vaccination.
Parents' rights groups are praising a plan to extend paid sick leave for many California workers that is now on a fast track to pass. On Tuesday, Governor Gavin Newsom announced a deal with legislative leaders on a bill to require businesses with 26 employees or more to offer 2 weeks of paid sick leave to recover from COVID or care for a sick family member. Social worker Matthew Kijak is with the nonprofit Raising the Future, which runs the California Parent Youth Helpline. He says people shouldn't lose their pay if they or their kids test positive.
So it's really, really important that we respect the role that parents play, who are basically the heroes of this entire pandemic, and honor that by allowing them to stay home and take care of their children who may be suffering from coronavirus.
A similar extension of sick leave during COVID expired last September. This proposal would be retroactive to cover sick days taken since January 1st and would come to an end on September 30th. Full-time workers would qualify for 40 hours of leave plus another 40 if they show a positive COVID test. Part-timers would get the number of hours off that they normally work. Opponents complained that the cost of the extended sick leave will be borne entirely by businesses, many of which still are struggling after the pandemic shutdowns. To help soften the blow on companies, the deal would restore some tax deductions and expand some tax credits. Kijak says workers' health must be the priority.
Business is important, but compared to having employees come to work with coronavirus, God forbid, die, it's not a comparison at all. whatever we have to spend to keep Californians safe needs to be spent.
Without this change, workers in California would only have 3 state-mandated days of paid sick leave. The bill is expected to be written and sent to a vote in the coming weeks. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
During the Omicron surge, one advocacy group is working to make sure that nursing homes are doing enough to protect their residents. Jonah Chester reports on how this is working in one state, Wisconsin.
As Wisconsin pushes through the Omicron surge, AARP is urging folks to ensure their loved ones in assisted living facilities are protected. According to AARP's COVID-19 dashboard, nearly 60% of the state's nursing home residents have been fully vaccinated and boosted as of mid-December. Helen Marks Dix with AARP Wisconsin encourages folks to learn more about how their loved ones' facilities are handling vaccinating and boosting residents and staff.
So what is the current status? Are they getting vaccinations to all their residents? And those already vaccinated, are they getting them the booster? And are they doing the screening and testing to make sure that they're in line with the government regulations about nursing homes?
AARP has released a series of recommended questions people can ask to learn about how their loved ones' facilities are handling COVID-19. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention reported more than 800 COVID-19 cases among Wisconsin's nursing home residents for the 2-week period ending last Sunday, January 23rd, the highest number in more than a year. According to AARP, as of mid-December, about 22% of Wisconsin's nursing home direct care staff had been vaccinated and boosted. Dix says with the recent ruling from the Supreme Court on the federal government's healthcare worker vaccine mandate, that number will likely rise significantly in the coming weeks.
The Fed said that if you're receiving Medicare or Medicaid money, that you have to follow the guidelines they set up.
According to the American Hospital Association, the deadline for those workers to be fully vaccinated is February 28th. Overall, new COVID-19 cases in Wisconsin have declined since January 19th, but are still higher than they were for most of 2021. For the Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Jonah Chester. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the KABU Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for KABU News in Depth. At 6 o'clock, it's Rose City Native Radio. Then at 7, the Indigenous Power Hour. Tonight's weather, we're looking at clear to partly cloudy skies, chilly, a low down at 30. Tomorrow, we're looking at some intervals of clouds and sunshine, a high near 48. For the weekend, Saturday's going to bring us a few clouds, 50 degrees. Sunday, we have a solid chance of rain, up to 45. Lows in the mid-30s, both days. Today in history, on this date in 1945, Soviet troops entered Auschwitz, Poland, freeing the survivors of concentration camps and finally showing the world the depth of the horror. Our quote of the day is from Anne Frank. Look at how a single candle can both defy and define the darkness. The U.S. State Department tells Americans leave Ukraine immediately. President Biden promises to soon appoint the U.S. Supreme Court's first black female justice. And the Federal Reserve may soon hike interest rates to fight inflation. With more on the stories impacting our democracy, here's today's edition of 2022 Talks.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
If Russia invades, civilians, including Americans still in Ukraine, could be caught in a conflict zone between combatant forces. The U.S. government may not be in a position to aid individuals in these circumstances.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken urged American citizens in Ukraine to leave immediately amid heightening tensions between Moscow and Kiev. The U.S. delivered a response to Russia's demands Wednesday, outlining core principles the U.S. will defend, including Ukraine's sovereignty and territorial integrity. Russian leaders warned of retaliatory measures. After 3 decades on the bench, Supreme Court Justice Stephen Breyer is expected to announce his retirement this week, which would provide an opportunity for President Joe Biden to make good on a campaign promise.
The president has stated and reiterated his commitment to nominating a black woman to the Supreme Court and certainly stands by that.
That's White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki Democrats expect to hold hearings and votes before Breyer officially steps aside at the end of his term. The nomination process could derail the Senate agenda, as Democrats hope to revive President Biden's climate and social spending bill. Raphael Warnock of Georgia and other Democrats sent a letter to the White House Wednesday urging the expanded child tax credit be included.
97% of families with children qualify. So this is about lifting the burdens of our neighbors. If made permanent, this tax cut for families would push poverty in a typical year down below 10% in 47 states.
Biden suggested recently the extension might need to be dropped. President Biden will travel to New York next week to discuss efforts to end gun violence with newly elected Mayor Eric Adams. During his campaign, Adams, a former police officer, promised to deploy more officers and reduce the amount of guns entering the city. He called on Congress to pass gun reform legislation. Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell indicated interest rates will soon be raised for the first time in 3 years as policymakers try to fight the highest inflation in nearly four decades.
The economy is quite different. It's stronger. Inflation is higher. The labor market is much, much stronger than it was. And growth is above trend, even this year, let alone last year. So all of those things are going to go into our thinking as we make monetary policy.
Some economists believe the Fed waited too long to confront rising inflation. Others are concerned moving too quickly could slow hiring. 27 states have redrawn their congressional maps. Several are still waiting approval, and others are disputed, including Alabama, North Carolina, and Ohio. Colin Morazzi with the ACLU of Ohio says redistricting has become a hot-button issue among voters.
The maps that are ultimately adopted from one state to another in the aggregate have the ability to change the party of power in the U.S. House of Representatives. And people have rightly begun to view redistricting as a linchpin for democracy.
I'm Mary Sherman for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
The Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs increases ownership of a hydroelectric project. The First Nations People Australia recognize a national holiday, Invasion Day. And Native women have a new tribal liaison for the Glen Canyon Dam Adaptive Management Program. Here's Antonia Gonzalez with the National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs, Oregon are seeing benefits from a hydroelectric project. As KWSO's Duncan Bruno reports, the tribes are seeing an increase in ownership and are looking forward to an economic boost.
A partnership between the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs and Portland General Electric saw an increase in ownership by the tribes of the Pelton Round Butte hydroelectric project. Before the increase in ownership, the tribe's interest was at 33.33%, and as of January 3rd, 2022, they increased that ownership to 49.99%. Jim Mannion is the general manager of the Warm Springs Power and Water Enterprises.
The real benefit behind it is the economic gain the tribes will see as a result of taking a larger volume of energy out of the project and being able to market that and sell that energy. The board of directors and the tribal council authorized was an execution of a power sales agreement between us and Portland General Electric at a price that makes the project economically beneficial for us to take that increased ownership. So what we should see in a few years to come is an increased value or increased benefit economically to the general fund.
Mannion says in the year 2036, the tribes could have the opportunity to become a majority owner of the Pelton Round Butte project. For now, they'll see how the increased benefit economically goes. I'm Duncan Bruno.
While many in the mainstream population in Australia marked Wednesday as Australia Day, for many First Nations people, January 26th represents Invasion Day. The arrival of colonizers brought loss of culture, country, and genocide. Due to the pandemic, many Invasion Day events moved online, but there were still rallies in major cities. Adam Evans from the National Indigenous Radio Service has more.
In the lead-up to Invasion Day, an organizer of a rally in Perth, Western Australia, said they cannot let the occasion slide because of the pandemic. Bibbulmun man Mervyn Eads said First Nations people have been dealing with a pandemic since 1788.
Pandemic of genocide. Our people dying at rates far greater than everyone else for such a low rate of population. So a pandemic to us has always existed. And the pandemic that we've faced, it's an English pandemic.
The day involved various events around the country, including mourning ceremonies, rallies and marches, and concerts to celebrate survival and acknowledge the harms brought by colonialism. The Woogoolora mourning ceremony in Barangaroo, Sydney, was just one of them. It celebrated the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation through music, dance, language and ceremony while acknowledging the shared history. One of the events which took place online was a rally in Tasmania, which included speakers, a dance ceremony and a minute's silence to honour the Aboriginal lives lost during invasion. While First Nations people raised their voices throughout the year, January 26, which represents the start of colonialism, has become a day where we express our anger and sorrow while calling for change.
That was Adam Evans reporting. The Bureau of Reclamation announced this week Jamesita Peshlakai is the new tribal liaison for the Glen Canyon Dam Adaptive Management Program, which focuses on dam operations, management, and resource protection. She'll support communication between five Interior Department agencies and tribes connected to the Glen Canyon and Grand Canyon in Arizona. Peshlakai most recently served in the state legislature. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Students saddled with huge amounts of student debt are starting to get some relief, and it's all thanks to a public service loan forgiveness program. One woman, Violet Hopkins, had been paying off her student debt for more than a decade. Eric Teganoff reports she's finally found out her debt's been forgiven.
Changes to a student loan program for public service employees is transforming the lives of Montanans who had their debt forgiven. In October, President Joe Biden's administration overhauled the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program, which erases student debt for public servants after they make 10 years of payments. But certain loan programs and repayment plans didn't qualify for forgiveness, a major disappointment for many debt holders. The latest changes open the door to as many as 500,000 Americans. That includes Violet Hopkins, an academic advisor at the University of Montana, who had about $80,000 in debt negated.
I was in shock. I'm just sort of like making sounds at my husband. Like, they forgave all of it. It's gone. It's all gone.
Organizations have been pushing for alterations to the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program, including the Montana Federation of Public Employees, which won a victory in the state Supreme Court in 2020. The decision allowed borrowers to bring state law claims against their loan servicer for failing to accurately account for their student loan payments. Corey Cutler is a high school math teacher in Butte. He was paying more than $300 a month in student loans, which were supposed to end in 2026. But last year, he got an email that took a big weight off of his shoulders.
It says, congratulations, on October 6th, the U.S. Department of Education changed the law and has backtracked, and you have successfully made your 120 payments. Everything else is forgiven. Oh, man, that made my day. Holy cow.
Hopkins says it opens up many things for her future.
For me, when my kid decides to go to college, I will be able to help him because I'm not going to be strapped with my own loans. We also own a home. I can dedicate more money to paying off my house. Like, I can breathe again.
Public service workers can apply for a waiver to ensure all their student loan payments count toward the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program, regardless of loan program or repayment plan. Borrowers must apply for the waiver by October 31st. For Big Sky Connection, I'm Eric Tegedoff. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, January 27th, 2022. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. You can call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast includes Josh Salem, Althea Billings, Suzanne Potter, Eric Tegedoff, Eric Alatis, and Jonah Chester. The producer is Annette Newell, our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Public News Service and Native Voice One. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K2A2BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Annette Newell. Glad you could join us. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. If you'd like to become a member and support your local community radio station, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth. That's coming up next.
You're listening to Making Contact.
I'm Salima Hamarani, and on today's Making Contact.
I almost died because of COVID. I was so sick, and I wrote a last letter to my family in case I died and left it in my property.
We're airing a two-part series about the outbreak of COVID-19 within California prisons.
All of our carceral institutions are grossly overcrowded. And so you introduce one person and it is just the case study of how fast an infection spreads.
We are basically creating 36 incubators of COVID in the state.
We talk about mass releases and how they could help combat the staggering numbers in prisons.
Just release them. Release them to the families that are waiting for them. Release them to their home environments.
And we talk about why there's so much pushback to the idea. Here's part one in our series, The Pandemic Inside, COVID-19 and California Prisons.
77,000. Of that, more than 2,200.